Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.
Years and years ago, I used to play at open mics and stuff at the Engine House Number 9 in Tacoma. And at Tacoma, Washington, for those of you who are or don't know. And I used to follow a guy named Rick Gilman. And I used to play that song somewhat. And Rick Gilman would come on, you know, and he would play it like note for note, like Hot Tuna. And it just pissed me off. You are listening to LA Talk Radio. This is the Writer's Block. I am, of course, your host with the most, Jim Christina, in the studio, or my little private studio, secret studio, somewhere in the Sawtooth Mountain Range. And I'm looking at my dear friend, my business partner, and my co-host, Richard Polinelli. Richard, say hello to the good folks at home.
Well, hello to everybody from very hot, for some reason, Western Colorado today. Somebody turned it turned the oven up on us today, and we're not ready for that.
100 degrees today here in little old Star, Idaho. The cows were sweating. The cows definitely got a sheen on. A few changes. The show will remain the same. The format will remain the same. Some personnel changes. Actually, we've just added Richard back to the lineup. Richard was our co-host years ago, and he is back with us. Bobby Jean will be on for sure, scheduled on the second and the fourth Thursday of the month. Russ Avison will remain his slot on the third Thursday. And everybody's welcome to call in and talk to anybody they want to talk to, as always. So, with this busy, busy, busy night we got going on, Mr. Henry Park is with us. If it is to first,
doing just fine, Jim. How are you doing?
I'm alive and kicking and pissing off everybody I can.
That's been my goal for years.
but I
have greetings, Jim and Richard. Shall I tell you what's happening?
Please do.
Oh, right. Well, I'm happy to say I have updates on a pair of Billy the Kid projects we discussed last month. Guns 3, alias Billy the Kid, is moving forward. As I previously told you, John Fusco, who wrote Young Guns 1 and 2, is co-writing this one with Emilio Estevez, will star and direct. And I don't know if everyone is aware of how experienced a director Estevez is, but he's done 8 features and 10 TV episodes, so he is a real director. And Christian Slater, who was terrific in the Dirty John Betty Broderick series, has signed on to return as Arkansas Dave Rudevo. Now,
without
the other project... I'm sorry.
Never mind.
Sorry. The other project, Michael Hurst's 8-part Billy the Kid miniseries for FX and MGM, will roll camera this month in Calgary with English actor Tom Blythe as the kid. And speaking of Western miniseries made by Brits, currently shooting in Spain, presumably on the sacred Sergio Leone locations, is the 6-parter The English, interesting name for a Western, starring Emily Blunt as a woman seeking revenge against a man she blames for the death of her son. Chess K. Spencer from all the Twilight movies, who is Nez Perce and Sue, plays a Pawnee ex-cavalry scout who works with her. It's written and directed by Hugo Blick, and it's big. A co-production of BBC and Amazon, with plans to film not only in Spain, but here in the U.S. and Canada and New Zealand and Australia.
Oh.
And
that's going to cost some money. Project.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is going to be a pricey show just for the travel expenses.
Right. Well, yeah.
And another British-produced project, Murder at Emigrant Gulch, is a Western thriller set in 1882 in Montana, where it will be filmed. Isaiah Mustafa, who starred in It, Chapter 2, and Shadowhunters, plays an ex-slave living in a former gold boom town. A new gold deposit is found, and the next day the prospector is found dead. Gabriel Byrne plays the town sheriff, and Thomas Jane, who's also one of the producers, plays the town preacher. And if you're looking for something to watch now, MVD Visual has just released a spectacular 4K restoration of Roy Rogers' final Western, Macintosh and TJ.
Wonderful.
It was made
movie.
In 1975. I'm sorry?
Oh, I said wonderful movie. Wonderful.
Oh,
saw
isn't
when it?
It
came out, yes.
And it's you. It has an image now like you've never seen before. It is just gorgeous. And it was made 18 years after his last Western before that. And I think it's probably his best performance. I put it right up there with when he did Dark Command for Raoul Walsh. And co-starring is Clay O'Brien, the littlest kid from the John Wayne film The Cowboys,
right,
who went on to be a rodeo champion after he quit acting. Roy plays an aging working cowboy who takes juvenile delinquent Clay under his wing. And Clay does audio commentary along with co-star Andy Robinson and your pal and mine, Courtney Joyner.
Oh.
Yeah. It's just wonderful. I can't recommend it highly enough. And there's a new Australian Western, High Ground, available on Amazon and other sites that I'm hearing great things about. And you know what? You can read about all this and so much more at www.henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
You know what, Henry? I realized after catching episode of the INSP, was it Gunfighters or whatever, with
the historical one they're doing right now.
Yeah.
The title is a little generic, and I.
It dawned on me that was run on the Heroes Channel 3 or 4 years ago.
It may well look like it, but no, the current series, they are, still editing the last few episodes.
Oh, really? Okay,
episodes.
So it's a different, but the look is almost identical.
I see. Well, a lot of it may be some of the same
true.
Crew, very likely.
That's true. Look
same location.
Peter Sciarrico. Yeah.
Right. Keep your eye out. There's Pete now. Yeah. He'll be in New Zealand and Australia and Canada.
Yeah. He's everywhere. He's like Chicken Man. Okay, my friend.
That's right. All righty.
We'll
have a great rest of your show.
Have a good one. Talk to you later, Henry.
Look forward to it.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Uh-huh.
Such disrespect for Texas Jack. Come on now.
Peter's been a friend of mine for a number of years. So I'm able to badmouth him occasionally. He does return the favor. So God bless you, Peter. We have with us tonight a return guest. His last visit was May 10th of 2018, and it's actually right after the Cowboy Festival last year. And he was on with us in the studio. Of course, that's what we did. We're doing live in the studio before we moved. And we was with Bob Brill, who was the first show after Richard departed. And and he, of course, Richard graced us with bringing in a bottle of almond tequila, which we all drank in the studio that night. And Wayne was Avershow is our guest tonight. He's an attorney from L.A. I'm going to let him give you a little bit of his own history, but we have some little twists and turns with Wayne tonight. So let's bring him in now, if you would, please. Please welcome back to the Writer's Block, Mr. Wayne Avershow.
Well, a standing ovation. Thank you, Jim.
Well,
very good.
It's really tough to get him to calm down, Wayne, but we met. Okay. Why don't you give our listeners a little bit of history about yourself? I mentioned that you were an attorney, and I did not mention anything about city council or anything like that. You can tell whatever lie you want to tell. Go.
Well, I'll keep it on the straight and narrow.
Oh, okay.
Well, I began my career. I ran two successful Los Angeles City Council campaigns when I was in my early 20s. That candidate won. He went on to become a very well-known Los Angeles City Councilman and County Supervisor named Zev Yaroslavsky. And after Zev's campaign, I ran another fellow's campaign, Bob Ronka. Bob was elected to the city council. So in my late 20s, I had two friends on the L.A. City Council. So I worked for both council members. I was a deputy. I was the chief of staff. And just enjoyed it a lot. Enjoyed working at City Hall. And it's a fascinating place. I know some people love it, some people don't. But I enjoyed it very much. I went on from politics and government. I worked in real estate development, and I've been a practicing lawyer for over 25 years, and I do real estate work, I do mediations, I do land use zoning work, and but the most fun is writing. So I have a relationship with the Real Clear Politics. Real Clear Politics is a political webpage, and they began Real Clear Publishing. And Real Clear Publishing is the publisher of my book, Center Stage, a political thriller. So that's what it's out there now. It's an Amazon bestseller, and it's combines my interests and my passions. Center Stage is about a rock star, Tyler Sloan, that runs for United States Senate in Nevada.
Right.
So it's people have compared it to a Arnold Schwarzenegger situation. It's a rock star, and I find the rock star a compelling story, and hopefully he's a compelling character.
Well, he is. And the leading question I have for you is this the original publisher of this book?
No, the original publisher. I was talking to Real Clear Politics about my second book, and I basically said, well, you should look at my first book. So the first book, Center Stage is published by Real Clear Politics.
Right.
Real Clear Politics / Real Clear Publishing.
Okay. And before, now they went and reimagined the title on this book. Because I remember this character, Tyler Sloan, from 3 years ago. And I got to reading your book, and I went, wait a minute. So I went back and thumbed through my notes and thumbed through everything I could find, and by golly, I was not wrong.
Well,
I kind of think that you added some pages and stuff to this book, though.
Yes, what Real Clear did, they liked the first book, and they said, why don't you... we'll change the title. You could go through it and enhance it, rewrite it, and everybody improves as you do it again. So this book, I think, is a tighter and better version. And then we're working on book two. We'll be published next year, 2022.
Okay, I kind of thought so because there was passages in there I do not remember from the first book.
Right.
I do remember some of the characters, of course, his father and his ex-wife, who's just a sweetheart. And I don't like to give away spoiler alerts, so we lie about characters if we can.
Yeah.
You know, and you got people in his campaign that are just sweethearts as well. You know, it's like all politics. Who's telling you the truth and who's fibbing? You know, who's really fibbing? And as far as political intrigue goes, it certainly is that, if nothing else. So that being said, Richard, I'm sure that you have a question or two about this particular novel.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I read it for the first time, so I'm coming at it fresh. How much of the, we'll go with the word shenanigans, that was being pulled by the campaign and all three campaigns that are involved in this thing, how much of that actually happens? I mean, did you draw on stuff that actually you saw happening over the years, or did you kind of embellish a few things? I mean, how, if somebody reads this book, how much truth do they see in what's going on?
Well, here's the answer to that. The answer is that there's Wayne's experiences, my own experiences in the book. There's other parts that I've seen firsthand or seen on television, and there's enhancements and there's embellishments. And the idea is always, and I worked with a book editor that always said, you have to show something new. show something new. So I took some things that happened and enlarged them, sweetened them, or what have you. But frankly, a political campaign, there's shenanigans. There's sometimes minor league shenanigans, sometimes major league shenanigans.
Well, there was some major league stuff going on. I did have one question about one thing you did. I'm going to try to phrase this without giving away who got what here. But there is a candidate that gets shot. And I was surprised that you didn't have it where that had been set up by the campaign to try to generate, you know, sympathy for the candidate who gets shot. Did you consider doing that, or did you think that might just be a line too far to cross for the readers?
I thought about it because decades ago I was not involved. There was somebody that set up different attacks to gain sympathy. I thought it was a line to sort of a stretch too far, and I wanted the shock value of someone being shot.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Because however you slice it, somebody getting shot is a tragedy, and it's a shocking tragedy.
Right. Right. Well, with all the other stuff that had been pulled, I just kind of figured it would be natural that would be the next step for that candidate trying to play catch up. Why not pull out all the stops? So I was kind of wondering if you had thought about doing it that way. And I'm just devious enough when I do these kind of stories that I probably would have. You know, after everything was all said and done, we find out, oh yeah, that was another one of the shenanigans that was being pulled. But I was just curious if you had given that some consideration. It sounds like you did.
Well, Richard, I thought there's a lot going on in the novel in the sense of it's a tight time window. It's a campaign.
Right, right,
so
right.
It's a candidate that gets in, and I made it shorter than the realistic campaign, if you will. Right now, I'm in Biden campaign for 2 years, and he got in late, if you will. A lot of Democrats got in earlier. But Tyler Sloan gets in late. It's a short campaign. It's a special election. The incumbent senator dies. So, boom, they have an election in Nevada. And I thought, you know, there's a lot going on. We have a rock star. We have a rock star that avoids lobbyists and special interest. And there's a sex tape going on. His past comes back to haunt him.
Right,
just think about a rock star's past life.
Right. You know, I was reading this book for the second time. It dawned on me that the name of this book probably should have been Dirty Tricks, the Story of Tyler Sloan.
Well, I have Sloan trying to rise above many
exactly.
dirty tricks.
But everyone behind him is not. And it's like, wow. Whoa, what is that? Wow,
I don't know.
That's loud. Well, here let's take a real quick break here now, and we'll get rid of that. There, the noise is gone. Okay, you are listening to LA Talk Radio. This is the Writer's Block, and we'll be right back with you right after this brief message from LA Talk Radio. Jim Christina here for LA Talk Radio. And if you've ever thought that you could be a radio host, well, now is certainly your opportunity. Go to www.latalkradio.com, find the link that says Be a Host, and follow the instructions. You know, everybody's got something to say. And if you've got a show that you think needs to be heard, how about you link up with us? Because we've got 50-minute shows available every day of the week, plus Sundays. So how about giving us a try? That's latalkradio.com. And listen every Thursday, 6 p.m. Pacific for the Writer's Block right here on LA Talk Radio. And we are back with Mr. Wayne Avershow and, of course, my friend Richard Polinelli. And if you want to call and talk to Wayne, the number here in the studio is 323-203-0815. Again, that number is 323-203-0815. And you can call and actually talk to Wayne live. Well, assuming that everyone is still live, but after all that racket. Okay. A little bit about your writing, Wayne. When did you start writing? Of course, your attorney started writing in school, but I mean, fiction.
Well, I took classes at UCLA Extension on how to write. I always enjoyed fiction. I thought I had a story to tell, and I took classes and sort of built up slowly and wrote. And if you write, the great lesson is you write, you rewrite. And so you do a draft, you look at it, you move on, you submit it, and you get editorial comments, you rewrite it, and it's a process. But I enjoy the process. I never have a problem, a writer's block, if you will. I just keep going, and I thoroughly enjoy it.
Okay.
It's creating an alternate world, if you will. And as an attorney, you write, every attorney, sometimes pretty dry documents.
Right.
Contracts, leases, easements. It's hard to be creative in that type of document.
Right.
But if you write a novel, it's your world.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, Richard. No, Richard and I both write fiction, and we. I totally agree with that. He's over there nodding his head, and I'm nodding mine. I love being able to create that world that may have existed, but now you're putting yourself into it, and you're allowing your imagination to run rampant in that world, and it's. I love that. You know, because it's fun. It's fun writing bad guys, and we all like writing bad guys. They're just wonderful. I was reading your blogs today on your website, and if anybody doesn't know, if you go to his website, which is, of course, WayneAbershow.com, he's got a blog section there, and he's got one on dialogue, and it was interesting to read your take on dialogue and what dialogue does and how to create dialogue. Maybe you might want to talk a little bit about that.
Okay. Well, dialogue is critical, and because it conveys an emotion, if you will, you can hear it. When I write it, one thing I do with dialogue, and I learned this, and sometimes you learn things over time, or you read it, or a teacher or editor tells you, but I say the dialogue out loud. So I write the chapter, I write the scene, and then I read it out loud. And when you read it out loud, sometimes you pick up that doesn't quite sound right, or you need greater emphasis, or you need a different word, whatever it may be. But the key with dialogue is you say it out loud. Another key is to keep it short.
Right.
If you have a long paragraph, that's generally speaking not how people talk. And also, it's not that interesting. I mean, attorney can make a presentation. I can talk for 5 or 10 minutes, but is it really that interesting to see it on paper? But if you see it in a novel, boom, boom, you make your point, and ideally there's somebody on the other side making a point or having a reaction, and dialogue keeps it going, keeps
right.
the flow going.
Right. We found that, Mariah found, that dialogue, if you keep it the way people actually speak, it is very short and staccato, mostly. People interrupt people. They go over the top of them. There's a lot of interaction in dialogue that a lot of writers don't catch. They don't do it, and they just don't have the knack for it. We've read some books on this show that the dialogue was – the story was good, but the dialogue was – not really great. So.
Yeah, and a lot of writers don't get, and a lot of reviewers, I got to throw them under the bus here for a second, they don't get is that people don't speak in proper English.
No.
So, yeah, you can lay out your dialogue in perfect English, and the reader's not going to buy into it because it doesn't sound right. Like Wayne said earlier, it just sounds unnatural.
Uh-huh.
And that's something, you know, saying your dialogue out loud is something I do. It helps you catch, oh, no. Wait a minute, that's no way anybody's going to say it like that.
Right.
And you can make the changes. So, yeah, that is a big key.
And once you get your character's identification down, you know how they speak. And to be able to put that into dialogue helps the character identification, helps the character become more real to the readers. So I also speak my dialogue. Do we still have you?
Yes, and,
oh, okay.
And I wanted to add to that. Each character, characters do speak differently. I speak differently than you, etc.
Right.
Especially if you're a candidate, you're supposed to speak a certain way. I intentionally wrote Sloan as a rock star candidate. I could have written a political figure how they would speak, and whether you like Trump or hate Trump, putting that aside, he broke the mold. He didn't speak like most elected officials speak. So I had a rock star speak, and that's different than most governors, senators, et cetera,
right. Yeah, your dialogue in this book is really, really good. So you're very welcome. The story is good. I mean, the whole book is good. And the second time around, I picked up stuff this time reading it that I didn't get the first time. So that was really great. Of course, some stuff you added, so I didn't get it the first time anyway because it wasn't there.
But and you also developed Tyler a little bit too, because I will admit, by the end of the second chapter, I was rooting for him to lose. I'm not going to say whether he does or not, but I was really rooting for him to lose by the end of the second chapter. About midway through the book, I kind of warmed up to him a little bit and understood him a lot better. So you really introduced us to him and then started peeling, as you say in your book, you start peeling away the onion layers and we got to see him. And it kind of changed my outlook on him to where by the end of the book, I was rooting for a win.
Right, right.
Intentionally had an early scene where he did not do well, where he spoke mm-hmm. at a university and he did not do well. He was too stilted. He tried to be something he's not. He tried to be, well, I better be political. I better be proper.
Right.
And it didn't go over well because the audience didn't want to hear that.
Right.
They wanted to hear the rock star.
Right. Well, I like Tyler in the fact that Tyler's got a love-hate relationship with his father. And it kind of permeates throughout the whole story, but towards the end of the book, it's coming down to the end, the realization that he finally understands his father a lot more clearly, having gone through the campaign himself, and I think that was a great view into his personality, into his psyche, and to be able to see that transition that he made where it came to his dad, and I really liked that a lot.
Well. We all evolve. I mean, I had a great relationship with my father, and I have, I think, a great relationship with my two sons. But there's always a period in people's lives, I shouldn't say always, but many times where you don't believe your parents are that smart, right? When a 16-year-old generally thinks, what do my parents know? That same 16-year-old, when they're 36, all of a sudden, man, dad, mom are smart people. They know what's going on.
Yep.
So, yep. You know, I tried to bring that forward, that Sloan understood. He had a rock star life,
right.
His teenage years and young adult years, different than his father's life. His father was an attorney and a political figure. So they had different universes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm going to assume, and I don't know, but from the ending of your book, I'm going to assume that Tyler is going forth into another novel.
That's a fair assumption.
Why, thank you, Wayne.
That's a very good assumption there. Jim, congrats. That's very accurate. Yes.
Well, thank you. I try to do good, but, you know, I'm just me, you know.
Yeah.
I had a gal the other day said, you do you, I'll do me. I said, okay, that's fine. That works.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm going to go ahead. Go ahead, Wayne.
I was going to say the master, or there's a few masters, but Michael Connelly is a master. And, you know, we all would, the Harry Bosch series of novels and the different characters, I think it's interesting to create a character and sort of ride with that character a while.
Right, and Harry Bosch is probably one of my most favorite characters in the world. He's never going to change. He's always going to be irascible. He's always going to be a pain in the ass to somebody. And that's just who he is.
He's a crusty guy.
He truly is. And he's not going to be anything different ever, which I like. So I'm not a crusty guy, but, you know, that's to be seen by a lot of different people. We're going to take this time to take another real quick break, and we'll be back with you shortly. You're listening to LA Talk Radio, their very own Writer's Block, and we'll be back right after this brief message from Tuscany Bay Books.
Congratulations, you finally finished that book. Now what are you going to do with it? Well, as a new writer, you probably do what all new writers do, stick it in the drawer with the other six or seven. Well, why not this time do something a little different? Why not get a hold of Black Dog Publishing and our fine imprint of Tuscany Bay Books? See, we can get that book out of the drawer. We can proofread it. We can edit it. We can format it. We can publish it. We can print it. We can copyright it. And we can get it on the shelf so your friends, your neighbors, your relatives, hell, even a person you don't know or two or three might want to buy a copy. It's all what it's about. And all of this for less than the cost of your firstborn. So why not give us a shot? BlackDogPublishing.co, TuscanyBayBooks.com. Your answer to getting your book published, and right now we're probably the best at what we do in this industry. Black Dog Publishing, Tuscany Bay Books.
And we are back once again with Mr. Wayne Avershaw and Richard Polinelli. And we're talking about Wayne's book, his current home, as it were. And it's a political thriller. As much as political thrillers are these days, it is one to read. It's a great, great story. And the title of the book is Center Stage, and this is the story of a rock star trying to be a senator. And there's trials and tribulations everywhere, and you really must pick up this book to read it. It's a great story. We're going to change the directions here a little bit, Wayne, if you don't mind.
Go for it, Jim.
Okay. When do you like to write? When is it your best creative time to write? I mean, being an attorney, I'm sure you got to write all the time. So sitting down and assigning yourself some time to write, do you do that regularly, or do you catch as catch can?
A little of both. I typically try to write. I try to write something every day. That's my number one rule. Try to write something every day. Some days are more prolific than others, but write something every day. I write my best in the morning, early afternoon, come evening. I think of ideas, and I keep a legal tablet. It's probably an A type of attorney, but I keep a legal tablet in my living room and my bedroom. So if I think of an idea, I write it down.
Uh-huh.
And it may be just a word or two, a sentence, but I'm always thinking, which is either great news or not, but that's how I do it.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm always thinking too, but not always about writing. I was in the hospital for like 3 months last year, and the whole summer, and I just found it really hard to get back into the groove of sitting down and writing a story. I finally did this year, and I've got two going right now. But it's to find the time sometimes, because with doing this show and doing other stuff and reading a book a week and doing interviews, and Richard and I do a lot of interviews. It gets hard to sit down and just regiment yourself to sitting down and writing. So I totally understand what you're saying. I don't have a word count that I have to have. We have one of our guests has been on two or three times now. He has a 10,000 a week word count that he has to accomplish. Or to have.
A great goal. It's tough because that means you can write a book. If a novel's 80,000 words, you can write it.
Exactly.
In a 8 weeks. It's a good goal. I salute that. It's tough, but if you can do it, he or she can do it. Great,
right?
But I would find it difficult, as you just explained. You're writing two books at once. I would find that difficult.
It is. And I tend to mix them up occasionally. So. Excuse me. Did you ever have a thought about getting with another author and writing a book together?
Not too much. I was in a writer's group before COVID, get together at somebody's house, and a few of us would read portions and receive comments. And some of the comments were great, and others were like, that's just not the direction I want to go.
Uh-huh.
So I like to – I have an editor – that I use, and that's as far as I want to take it.
Yeah, yeah. Richard and I got together. We did a book together. It's called The Last Lonely Trail. I had never written a book with another author before, and I had a lot of trepidation. He did the first three chapters and sent it over to me to do the next three. And I had this fear in me that they were not going to mesh. They weren't going to work together. And as it turned out, the book is seamless, and you can't tell where one author stopped and the other started. So it worked out really well for us. But then we have similar styles. Wow, that's you, Richard.
Is that me coming back in? Okay.
That's you. Go ahead.
Unusual, when you say it was seamless, because I read James Patterson and Bill Clinton wrote a novel, The President is Missing.
Uh-huh.
And I could sort of tell which parts were Clinton. And because it sounded like Bill Clinton, with some other parts just did not. So congrats to you guys if you can do a seamless.
In fact, one of the reviews said this author, meaning that it was single author, needs to write another book because this one was really cool. So we liked that a lot. And of course, Richard's name is the only one that's on the book. So on Amazon. Ronan just told you, Richard, that he muted your mic.
Well, I just unmuted it, Ronan. So there, take that. we're having some fun here in Colorado, so I do.
We are.
I apologize.
Okay, he says your mic is too hot.
I'm going to work on it. Hang on.
Okay. So anyway, we have when you sit down and you want to write, what's your favorite place? You have a favorite place in your house you'd like to sit down and write?
I created a mini den, if you will, with a computer, and I'm all set up. I've got everything here. It's clean. I've got everything behind me that I need. So I just have one place where I write. Now, occasionally I'll print out a chapter. I want to see how it works, or I'm not quite satisfied. Then I'll sit down somewhere and just with pen and paper.
Right.
Move things around or make some changes or strike or add or what have you.
Right.
But I'm good at a computer. It's worked real well.
Oh, good. You made a comment earlier, and I want to bring that back up because you kind of threw it in. It was almost a throwaway line. In that when you're writing, you stop and you go back and rewrite as you're writing. And that's a lot of people do that, and a lot of people don't do that. And I do that, and then my manuscript goes to my editor, and then she just tears it apart. So that's how that works.
Yeah, it's an ongoing battle. Yeah, to find the balance between writing and finishing. I try to finish a chapter, and once I'm done with that, I stay on that chapter. I change it, I tweak it, what have you, then I try to move on. Because if you don't go to chapter, you have to go to chapter 2 or chapter 3, chapter 4, etc.
Right.
But you have to find that balance between cleaning up the mistakes and having it flow and everything interesting and lightly just like with real detail look
right.
at each word. But again, at some point, move on or you'll never finish.
Absolutely, and I totally agree with that. I tend to go back and rewrite as I'm going, and then when I turn my chapters over, they go to my editor, who happens to be my wife. She's really good at it. She gets a chapter at a time, and she'll go through and she'll go, well, wait a minute, why is he here? Why, you know, what? How did he get here? Oh, that's something I didn't think about. So, you know, let's go back and rewrite right. again. You know, so. But writers, especially new writers, and we are geared to new writers in this show, don't think about stuff like that. They don't think about, you know, an editor is going to clean up your manuscript for you, not necessarily rewrite it. So they have to be, you know, ready for that particular escapade in their lives is having an editor telling them what to do. So
you have to be, as a writer, you have to be open to the editor. Because if you go in thinking that the editor is an enemy, you guys, our book is going to suffer for it.
Absolutely. And I'm sure, Wayne, that you found that.
Yes, you have to be, I think Richard hit it, you have to be open, you have to be receptive to the ideas. At the end of the day, it's your book, it's your baby, but if it's not making sense to the editor, or in writing my second book, my first draft, I had too many characters. The editor said, you know, you just have too many characters here. So, okay, someone else saw that, and I combined characters, deleted characters, and et cetera, to try to make it flow better. So you need that other set of eyes, if you will.
Right, right. I was going to ask you the question about writer's block, but you already answered that. So I'm going to move on to another question. When you're putting your characters together, do you allow the characters to dictate somewhere in the manuscript, once you get to know them, do you allow them to dictate some of the storyline to you as you're going?
I would say somewhat, yes. What I try to do in the beginning is, create an outline of characters and chapters. And I have some traits of each character. It's not pages and pages, but it may be half a page of a character.
Okay.
Maybe a page of the main characters, and to you know where they're from, what their motivations are, what their fears are, what their concerns are, and based on that outline of characters and chapter, it can change. And sometimes you write, you go, well, those two characters are too similar, okay, or the chapter, the chronological sequence, that didn't make sense. Chapter 4 should be chapter 8 and vice versa.
Right.
So you're just constantly tweaking and modifying as you go. But I find that I have to have something to start with. Some people just write, and the story takes them wherever their mind flows. That's their style. Great. To me, I need an outline as somewhat of an anchor.
Okay. That certainly works. I mean, I'm not an outliner. I'm a pantser. So I'm one of those that the story takes me where it goes. And, you know, I have a general idea where it's going to start and where it's going to end. And then I kind of fill in the in-between as I go, which is what we did with Last Lunacy Trail, which we did. We do most of the books that we write. Richard, you're more of an outliner than I am.
Well, my process I learned when I took a creative writing class in Odessa, Texas, like 40 years ago. Our instructor said, write your first chapter, write your last chapter, and then fill in the gap between. But at least with that last chapter, you know where you've got to get to.
Right.
So that way, if you go wandering off, okay, as long as you can write yourself back to that ending you've got set up.
Right,
and it always worked for me that way. I've really been more comfortable going that way with a general idea of what I want to fill in, but also adjusting as I go, as you know, the characters and the story kind of dictates, hey, maybe this would be better if we went over this way. So I'm kind of a mix between the two.
Okay. Well, that shows you what works for one does not work for the other.
Of course.
So anybody who's listening really can find their own path. It may be an outline. It may be, like you just laid out, Richard, the first and last chapter, whatever works. But I think one key, one constant is to keep going, is to keep writing.
Right.
Yes.
And whatever you have to do, obviously some people get bogged down, and that's okay. But you want to get up. If you stop on Tuesday, that's fine. Pick it up Wednesday or maybe Thursday. But you don't. I don't find it successful if it's letting chapters sit for a week or two. I
right. don't. Right. Okay, that's fair. We're going to take another real quick break, and we'll be back with you shortly. You're listening to LA Talk Radio's very own The Writer's Block. We'll be back after this real short message from Creative Edge Publicity.
Hi, Jim Christina here for Creative Edge Publicity. And you know there's a reason that authors flock to Creative Edge. Yes, it's true, and no one would believe it, but it is true. Creative Edge, the grassroots publicity firm that has stayed community-minded, is growing. And not only growing, but busting right out of their seams. With a client base of over 70 authors, 2 New York Times bestsellers, 6 USA Today bestsellers, and multiple multiple international bestsellers and award winners, Creative Edge in 4 years has become one of the mainstays in the publicity book market, offering reader-focused opportunities in all levels of media, including podcasts, radio, TV, print, and much more. When it comes to publicity, Mickey Mickelson and Creative Edge are experts in the book industry. Look him up at www.creative-edge.services. Creative Edge, it's your brand, your future.
And we are back with our author of the evening, Mr. Wayne Aversham, and of course Richard sitting out there in noisy Fruta, Colorado.
Apparently it's that kind of a day here.
Well, yeah, you just your week hasn't been very good, so.
No, it has not.
So in the time we have left, Wayne, and we are getting short, first of all, what's on your nightstand to read?
I just bought John Grisham's last book, so I'm going to read that. I alternate. I can't write two books at a time, but I read two books at a time. So I'm going to read Grisham. I just finished, and I'm in the middle of a nonfiction book, 1974, about Los Angeles that year, cultural issues, music, entertainment. It's good. It's a good book, and I look forward to Grisham's book. The last fiction I finished was Connolly's last book. So I'm always have something to read.
Okay. Next question for you is, this, of course, is a show for young writers. What advice would you have for a writer starting out or a new writer that's trying to get something done?
Well, okay, that's good. I would try to educate myself and educate through books, through internet articles, through classes, if you can attend them. There's a really interesting series called Masterclass, streaming, that has famous instructors on every subject known to man, including writing. David Balducci, the famous novelist, has a class, and you take it at your leisure, the class, and it's interesting. It gives great ideas and tips. So I would educate yourself. Outline something for myself, I'd outline it, and dig in, start going, start writing.
Excellent, excellent advice. You got anything else, Richard, before we shut this puppy down?
Well, the one thing I wanted to kind of circle back to was just on the book, Wayne has a very interesting character in the news media. And my background, I spent 20 years in newspapers. And the character of Mac, and I think it's John Mack, is the reporter.
Yes.
If I'm remembering right. Okay. I actually worked with somebody who was very much like him. And I guess maybe.
Do you?
I know. Yeah. But he was just as bad. And he was a political reporter. So he went on to be a chief of staff for some politician. So I saw a lot of my former coworker in that guy. And you really nailed the news media in the political realm in your book. And I just wanted to kind of compliment you on that as somebody who was on the news media inside and saw it from that side of the equation.
Well, thank you. Let me say it quickly. Everybody brings their own prejudice, bias, personalities, etc., to the table. And when I worked at City Hall, there was a reporter for the LA Times who was just an ornery person. I mean, he's just always mad and angry. And then someone else told me why. He said, well, he's going through a very tough divorce. Well, okay, fine. So it didn't really excuse him, but now at least you understood it a little bit. So people have jealousies. There was another reporter who was frankly jealous of other people's success. So you have to deal with it.
Yeah, and there are some people who just, as you work with, just aren't very nice people.
Yeah.
You know, that just happens. Okay, Mr. Wayne Aversham, thank you so much for joining us again on the Writer's Block. It was as before. It's been a hoot having you. And we hope that when this new novel is coming out, you get a hold of, have your publicist get a hold of Jerry and get your book back on the show next year.
Very good. Look forward to it. And then hope everyone checks out Center Stage.
Yeah, Center Stage is the name of the book. It's available on Amazon and all online booksellers, and you can pick it up. Is it available at Barnes & Noble or any of the brick-and-mortar stores?
Some Barnes & Noble, some yes, some no.
Okay.
So the best bet is BarnesandNoble.com or okay. Amazon.
Okay, yeah. Excellent. And your email address, if you don't mind, so fans can get a hold of you?
WALAW, @sbcglobal.net.
Okay. And Wayne, thank you again for joining us. It's been really, really emotional. Not emotional. Nice having you. I don't know where that came from, but
somebody's been in the tequila again.
Not yet. I remember your comment about the tequila last time you were on, Wayne.
Okay. Well, that stayed with you. All right.
You're the man. Thank you so much, buddy. Get back with us. We'd love to have you back on the show.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Richard.
Okay, Wayne.
Thanks, Wayne.
Have a good evening. Next week, we have V.S. Holmes. She's a Mickey writer, and her new book is Heretics. She was on not too long ago, but she's back with a new book, Heretics, and she'll be with us next Tuesday. And of course, you'll be here. Bobby will be here. So the three of us will be here.
And hopefully I'll have my microphone issues ironed out.
Dialed in by then, yeah. If not, Ronan will do it before we go to the air. So
yeah,
I mean, he did it with me too. We had to dial this hockey in for a long time.
It's not surprising, given the way the week has played out, that this would have happened tonight. So I'll just leave it at that.
Of course. Well, Richard, always, it's just great having you back on the show with us.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad to be back here.
Oh, we're glad to have you. And for myself and Richard, of course, and Bobby Jean Bell, Russ Savison, Ronan Rosner, and of course, the man who makes it all happen, Mr. Sam Hassan, and LA Talk Radio, the Writer's Block, we are out of here.